with the whole exoplanet revolution, we're discovering all sorts of new kinds of planets out there that I hope work their way into science fiction one day.
You're listening to Universe of Art, a podcast from Science Friday and WNYC Studios about artists who use science to take their work to the next level. I'm D. Peter Schmidt. I've been having Dune on the brain. The second movie came out a couple weeks ago, and I loved it. It blew my mind. And it takes place on a planet called Arrakis, many millennia into the future.
My Lord Duke, welcome to Arrakis.
It's a scorching hot world covered in, what else? Dunes that are home to giant, deadly sandworms.
You wouldn't want to go down out there. It's worm territory.
And it got a lot of us at Science Friday wondering, could a planet like Arrakis actually exist? And if so, could it sustain life? Well, here to talk about that is Dr. Mike Wong, astrobiologist and planetary scientist at the Carnegie Institute of Science based in Washington, D.C. And one quick note before we get started, we forgot to mention in the original interview that the oxygen on Arrakis is generated by the sandworms themselves, at least according to the book's author, Frank Herbert. Now here's Science Friday host Ira Flatow talking with Dr. Mike Wong about the real-life science behind the world of Dune.
You know, Mike, when I watch sci-fi movies like Dune, I'm always thinking to myself, come on, is there really any science behind here? Do you think like that also?
Yeah, it's hard to shut it off as a professional scientist whenever I am watching the depictions of strange new worlds. And I keep thinking to myself, is that real? What exactly is right here? What are they getting slightly off? But it's all in good fun. And I really enjoy watching science fiction. I'm a huge fan of Star Trek myself, and that's full of strange new worlds every single week. So I don't turn it off, but I think it enhances the experience.
Yeah. All right. So let's take Arrakis, please. And its famous giant deadly worms. Could there be a planet like this and have those big worms on it?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I think the concept of a desert world isn't too far-fetched. After all, we know about worlds in our solar system that have less liquid water on them than Earth. Earth's surface is covered in about 70%, is covered by liquid water. But you go to our next door neighbors, you look at Venus, its water has long boiled off and escaped to space. And then you turn the other direction and you look at Mars, and Mars is this cold, dry desert where a lot of the water that still remains on Mars is in a frozen state. So it's mostly ice. So yeah, I think that the idea of a desert world is certainly valid. Whether or not it can host giant worms, that's another issue. I see two things that I'd like to investigate and poke at with the hypothesis that you could have giant worms on a desert world. The first is, what are they going to eat? This world Arrakis, it's said not to have any giant bodies of liquid water. We think about the largest animals here on Earth, the whales, they're able to sustain their huge biomasses because there are oceans full of krill and plankton and little critters that they can just gulp up and swallow. So what are these giant sandworms eating all day long? Are there smaller critters like in the sand dunes too? We're not sure about that kind of ecology from what is presented to us in Dune. The other question is, what are they breathing? Where is all the oxygen in the air on Arrakis from? Because the oxygen on Earth is generated by photosynthetic life. We've got all these rainforests full of trees. We've got cyanobacteria, this blue-green algae in the oceans. They're all doing photosynthesis, pumping oxygen into the air. And that's the oxygen that we breathe. But Arrakis is just a desert world. So where did all of its oxygen come from?
Yeah. Could you make oxygen?
Yeah. I think in the lore of Dune, Arrakis once had large bodies of liquid water because we see these salt flats on the world. So perhaps there was an ocean that evaporated and left these salt flats. And maybe in that ocean, there were photosynthetic life forms that produced a lot of oxygen. And the oxygen that is currently used by the giant sandworms today is left over from that. Alternatively, you can also source oxygen from things that have nothing to do with life whatsoever. So you can split apart molecules in an atmosphere, molecules like water or carbon dioxide that have oxygen in them. And then when you split those up using ultraviolet light from the star that Arrakis orbits, you can generate some amount of oxygen in the air.
if it's not worms that are living on that, on our mythical planet, what kind of life could a super dry planet like Arrakis sustain?
Luckily, we have really dry places here on Earth that we can look to for examples. So there are all sorts of really inventive critters, especially microscopic ones, that can survive in really dry environments. So in the Atacama Desert, there are some really inventive microbes that sort of live within the salt crystals. And so I think that a desert world could still sustain some degree of microbial diversity on it. And indeed, you know, when we send rovers to Mars, that's kind of the life that we're looking for. We're not really expecting to see any cheetahs, you know, prowling Mars's surface, but we need really fancy instrumentation to try to spot evidence of microbial life in those soils.
Let's talk about all the sand, right? That where the worms live, there's a huge amount of sand. Could that form on other worlds?
Yeah, actually, one of the coolest examples of sand on another world. Well, first of all, there is sand on Mars, but I'm going to go all the way out to the outer solar system and talk about Saturn's moon Titan here. Titan's a really fascinating world because in many ways, it's kind of Earth-like. It's got sand dunes, it's got mountains, it's got rivers, and it's got precipitation too, but it's made of a completely different material. So Titan's out in the outer solar system. It's super frigid there. The bedrock on Titan is solid water ice, and it sort of like snows these organic, carbon-rich, fractal-like compounds out of its atmosphere. And so the sand dunes on Titan might be some combination of eroded water ice and this fluffy kind of organic rich material that is sedimenting out of its atmosphere. So there's lots of possibilities for sand across different types of worlds.
We're always looking for water, and you mentioned Titan. We may not have to go way out into outer space to find life because it seems like it may be possible in our own solar system.
That's right. Yeah, we've got lots of really tantalizing environments in our solar system that we're really curious about in terms of its astrobiological potential, that it's potential for alien life. And so, you know, anything from, you know, the clouds of Venus, perhaps, all the way to, you know, ancient life living on Mars when it was more warm and wet and habitable, to the outer solar system, the moons of Jupiter and Saturn, namely Europa and Enceladus, respectively. These are moons that have liquid water oceans hidden beneath icy crusts. They're maintained in their liquid water state by tidal forces, the gravitational pull of Jupiter and Saturn sort of flexing the interior of those moons, keeping them warm. And then, of course, Titan, that really enigmatic world orbiting Saturn with this organic rich atmosphere, bodies of liquid hydrocarbons, methane and ethane on its surface that could potentially host weird forms of life that don't use liquid water at all. The possibilities are really endless. And I'm so excited for this next phase of planetary exploration that really sort of starts later this year with the launch of the Europa Clipper mission to go out to the outer solar system, return there, and try to find evidence for habitability and potentially life.
I from the way you're speaking, I'm thinking that you would think that there's more chance of finding life than not finding life.
I guess as an astrobiologist, I have to be inherently, fundamentally hopeful, right? That there is something out there to try to find.
Right.
As a scientist, I try to say, I don't know, right? I don't know if there's life elsewhere in the universe. I'm going to let the data speak for themselves. When we go out there, when we sample these environments, when we take our microscopes and our other instruments and try to look for evidence of life, then I will say what the probability might be. But right now, we haven't really done a really good job of looking yet. You know, we've tried a few times. There are the Viking missions in the 70s on Mars, and, you know, Curiosity and Perseverance are doing their thing these days, but we haven't really investigated many of these worlds, Europa, Enceladus, Titan, in the kinds of way that could actually find life. And so once we do that, then I'll be more confident about saying, oh yeah, there is, you know, this probability of finding life versus that probability. As a scientist, I've got to say the data will speak for themselves, and we just have to go and do our jobs to the best of our ability to see what's out there.
Yeah, you mentioned the moons of Saturn and moons of Jupiter that are full of water, or might be places we could find life there because of that. Would you like to see them represented in films instead of just a dry, rocky place like in Dune?
Yeah. I think planetary science, if it's taught us anything, it's that we've got to expect the unexpected when we explore outer space. You know, these surprising ocean worlds, again, you know, that was completely mind-blowing when people discovered them. And with the whole exoplanet revolution, we're discovering all sorts of new kinds of planets out there that I hope work their way into science fiction one day. I love this idea, Ira, of depicting icy ocean worlds more in science fiction. I think there could be some really fun adventure exploring the hydrothermal vents in the bottom of a Europa-like planet. That would be great.
So if I put you in charge of making the next Hollywood blockbuster, you might put us on a watery planet.
Yeah, you know, I think it would be really fun to explore a super watery planet. Let me tell you about this type of world that we're currently investigating called a Haitian planet. That's kind of a weird name, right? Haitian, what does that mean? So this is a type of planet that we think we may have discovered a few of them outside of our solar system, orbiting other stars. These are planets that are somewhere in between the size of Earth and Neptune. And so they have one quality that is kind of like Earth, in that they have a surface that is covered in an ocean of water. But the atmosphere is more like that of a giant planet, so full of hydrogen. Mm. And so if you smush the word hydrogen and ocean together, you get the word Haitian. And so that's wow. What a Haitian world looks like. And so the idea here is that, you know, maybe there is life swimming in that kind of ocean under a hydrogen rich atmosphere, which I'll just emphasize that, again, our atmosphere is made up of nitrogen and oxygen, not hydrogen. So it'd be a very different kind of environment with a very different kind of life. And it would be really fun to try to investigate or dream up in a Hollywood sense what life might look like on such a planet.
Wow, that's a great idea. Mike, thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Yeah, no problem. This was real fun.
It was fun. Dr. Mike Wong, astrobiologist and planetary scientist at the Carnegie Institution for Science based in Washington.
Universe of Art is hosted and produced by me, D. Peterschmidt, and I also wrote the music. The original segment was produced by Rasha Aridi, and our show art was illustrated by Abel Hayford. And support for Science Friday's science and arts coverage comes from the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation. We'll be back in 2 weeks. See ya!